All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Monday. Happy Monday. That means it's time for another episode of RFRX, your prescription for coping. I'm your host, Kara, and I have with me here tonight your co-host, Rob. Rob, how's it going?
Just fine. How are you doing? How's everybody doing? I actually had a little bit of a scare. I took a COVID test today.
Uh-oh.
Oh, good
scare. Is everything okay?
So far.
Okay, good to know.
I woke up with a really hoarse throat, although I was at a dance and the music was loud and I was like screaming at people just to talk to them for quite a long time. And I'm hoping that's what did it. And it wasn't any kind of infectious agent. So far, so good. Because I'm going to PsyCon on Thursday and I can't if I have COVID. So that would be bad.
Yeah. Screaming at people in close proximity in an enclosed space has never been connected to a COVID outbreak. No. Yeah, that's not true. That was sarcasm for the record. Well, I hope you're okay. Keep
How are
us
you doing?
Posted. Yes, I am doing well. I did not do anything quite as social as that. Although over the weekend, I did go to the Shameless Sexuality Conference that Janice Selby mentioned a few weeks ago when she was here.
Oh, how was that? And
it was fabulous. I thoroughly enjoyed it. There were some familiar faces, including Dr. Ray, who were there speaking, and a lot of really good panels. It was about kind of after purity culture, sort of getting back into a space that feels more normal and comfortable around intimacy and sexuality. So I thought it was quite good. And I have been told by Janice that there are still tickets on sale, even though the conference has already happened. Apparently, you can still buy a pass to listen to all of the recordings if you want to. So that is something that people can still do if they want to benefit from watching the recordings of the talks that happened at the conference. So I just dropped the link for that, shamelesssexuality.org, in the chat for anybody that wants to check that out. But that was a pretty good way to spend the weekend, I thought.
Good.
But that's just me. Without further ado, Rob, would you like to introduce our guest speaker?
Okay, let me see if I can get through this without making my voice even more hoarse, because I wrote this way before I had a hoarse voice, and now I realize, oh my God, I wish I wrote half of this.
We are the architects of our own problems.
Yes, in this case, true. Susan Gerbic is the founder of the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia project. We call it GSOW. This is an organization of volunteers contributing to the accuracy of Wikipedia in many languages. She also is the founder of a local skeptics group, the Monterey County Skeptics, which holds an annual short conference known as Skepticamp. Since 2018, Susan has been a fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, that's CSI, and she's a frequent contributor to their online magazine, The Skeptical Inquirer. She also makes regular appearances on the Skeptic Zone, billed as the podcast from Australia for Science and Reason. In 2019, Susan was awarded the Robert B. Ballas Prize for Critical Thinking. And in 2018, she used a grant from the James Randi Educational Foundation to establish her nonprofit, About Time, which focuses on scientific skepticism and activism. While her particular focus has been on educating the public about psychic mediums, which she has dubbed grief vampires, hence my background here, and which we will discuss tonight, Susan's activism encompasses many areas of interest to scientific skepticism, such as alternative medicine, conspiracy theories, and facilitated communications. Welcome to RFRX, Susan.
Thank you so much. This is exciting. Hey.
I'm so excited to have you on, and this is a great follow-up to our conversation from last week, where we talked a little bit about psychics. So I cannot wait to hear.
So for people who missed it last week, was about the Great Australian Psychic Prediction Project, which Susan helped to organize. And I mentioned her in it because she's the one who got all the skeptics together to score all the thousands and thousands of psychic predictions from Australia.
Yes.
I'm a cat herder.
I was about to say herding skeptics has got to be about like herding cats.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's right up there.
So what's the name of your talk at PsyCon this week?
Oh, herding cats during the pandemic.
Kara is psychic.
See, yeah. I mean, this keeps coming up.
It's on my mind. True. I keep rehearsing my talk over and over. So it's just on my mind right
now. So you're basically going to talk about the aspect of getting people who are interested in the skeptical arena to do something, right?
Yeah. The first 20 minutes or so is going to be about what we did during the pandemic. And then the last 5 minutes to 8 minutes is going to be, let's have a serious talk. And that part right there, I have not done ever before. I can't do that to a small group of people of 20 people in a talk. So when I'm going to have 600 people or so in front of me, that's when you have a little heart to heart with people. So the first beginning is just going to be, here's what we did. But I've narrowed it down to just a few things because there's no way I can cover all the stuff we did during the pandemic, which was a lot.
In a half hour, right? You get a half hour to talk.
Yeah, I'm not used to talking for a half an hour. No way.
And see, we give you an hour.
I appreciate that. We can cover as much as we can cover here. Let's see, Rob, whatever you got in store.
So like first, maybe clarify for people who might not know, what's the difference between a medium and a psychic? Are all psychics mediums? Are all mediums psychics? What's the deal with that?
So a psychic is somebody who is the kind of a generic term, and we use that all the time. What I and my group do is we mainly focus on mediumship. Those are the people who claim to be able to communicate with dead people or animals or whatever. But so a medium is usually psychic, but a psychic is not always a medium. So some psychics do tarot or palm reading or so and so, that kind of stuff, but they don't usually communicate with dead people. So
I imagine some psychics are small or even large.
Yeah.
Here all night. We have a topic for puns in the chat tonight.
Yeah, I just thought I'd toss that out there. Hey, y'all, you know what I forgot to do? And no one, you know, psychically, you know, knew I was going to forget to do that and reminded me is I forgot to launch the poll. Should I do that now?
Do the poll.
Go for it.
Okay, let's do the poll now. I'm going to go ahead and launch it. This way we can have questions that all of you fine people can answer too. And I'll go ahead and read the questions real quick. So take a second to answer those if you would like to. Question number one is, do you believe that there are people who can communicate with the dead? Yes, no, or not sure. Question two is, do you believe you can or ever have communicated with the dead? Yes, no, or not sure. And three, have you ever purchased the services of a psychic medium? Yes, more than once. Yes, just once or never. So I'll leave that up for a few minutes and then we can look at the results here in just a minute. So sorry about that. Didn't mean to interrupt, but all right, back to what we were talking about. Okay, I think what we were talking about was grief vampires. Can you tell us a little bit about that term, Susan? What does that mean?
Sure. So my partner, Mark Edward, came up with the term grief vampires, and it is it's because we, like I said, we focus on those people who say that they're communicating with the dead, and they are trying to get a hook in you, and they're trying to take your money, or they're using it for power or money, some way of controlling you. But they're praying, and I mean praying as in the P-R-E-Y, not P-R-A-Y, on your vulnerabilities. And at the moment that you're usually at the height of your vulnerability. So they're not really, the kind of psychic where you would just walk by and they do your palm reading and you never see them again. These are the kind that are really trying to pull you in and get a hook in you. I guess that's how the best way to say it. So they're reading off your emotions. They're preying on your vulnerability. You're desperate, you're lonely, you're whatever reason. So that's where we kind of differentiate between those and you would go to a party and you would get a reading from somebody there or whatever. That's kind of like a Halloween festival or something. Those aren't necessarily grief vampires.
Oh, I see. If it's just kind of like for fun or a novelty, that's not really the same thing as what you're talking about. Where
people are really trying to get into your and preying on you, trying to do, trying to get into your wallet.
Yeah, and that's really they're not actually feeding on your grief. They're feeding on your money that you're willing to give them because of
your desperation, your loneliness. Yeah. You're willing to believe, your desperation to need to believe, right? The pandemic has made it worse because, you know, the pandemic has been just scary as heck. Now that we're looking back and, you know, most of us are vaccinated, we can kind of see the numbers dropping. But at the beginning of the pandemic, it was terrifying. And people would take their loved ones to the hospital, drop them off, didn't know if they'd ever see them again. In many cases, they never did get to talk to them again, except maybe over a, you know,
isn't it true that this whole phase of belief in this actually started during one of the big world wars when people were dying in mass?
Well, we've always had, well, we've had some sort of spiritualism, just, you know, religion in itself is spiritualism. We want to have people to, you know, they having a belief in life after death with what all the major religions, well, most of the major religions, it's just a tiny baby step that somebody's going to take advantage of that and say, oh, we all believe in life after death. Guess what? I have an open channel. Yeah, I have a channel that sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't work. And even if they're not doing it for money, they're doing it for power or they're doing it for publicity. And so we've had it forever, but just now with the mediums that we have, the medium of technology we have, it's so much easier. I mean, they went to, during the pandemic, they all went to Zoom. And so I and my group went to Zoom also, and we were able to watch it in real time. We just did what most of the people here are doing right now. We turned off our video, we turned off our audio, and we hit record, and we just watched everything, and we're able to be participants in a lot of ways. So the pandemic created a lot more opportunities. Plus, there's a lot of cash. There's a lot of money in this, as Rob well knows. He's done a lot of research on the money. But if you're paying into PayPal or Venmo or Cash Apps, it's cash. So, you know, I don't know, but I would suspect that a lot of this money isn't seeing its way to the government through, you know, filing in or anything like that. I think it's all just cash.
One of the really interesting things about that is in one of the presentations I do, the number $2 billion comes up as, I think this was reported by the American Foundation of Psychics and Mediums, something like that's their name. And they reported that, you know, their members report earnings of $2 billion. But yeah, if you're paid with cash, you're not going to report that. I'll bet that the tip of the iceberg. That
number. Like the faith healers did, you know, they just get envelopes of cash. And at some points they were just throwing away anything that had less than the $20 bill in it because they didn't need it. They're just like, throw that all away. We don't need those $1 and $2 and $5. No, let's make the big bucks. And
these people were all over television. Pretty much every network has somebody that they promote, right? Lifetime has, I'm going to mix the networks up, so I won't do that.
But yeah, Tyler Henry's on one. Yeah, I know what you mean. They're all over.
Right. The Long Island Medium, Teresa Caputo's on another one. Thomas John has been on two different networks. So how could the TV be promoting these people and showing these things like they're real if they're not? How can that be?
Well, it's very profitable.
People wonder, right? How could I see it with my own eyes? It looks like they're doing what they say they're doing.
Yeah, we get, I hear from people all the time who will tell me, oh, well, I thought he was a real deal because ABC, CBS, whatever is promoting him. So I thought they'd check him out. I mean, people are really just that way. They just think it must be real because they're on TV. I know that's hard to believe, but we hear that comment all the time. But I really honestly believe that people are blinded. The executives at these places, they think it's entertainment. And we hear that from, you know, Bob Nygaard, the psychic PI who does a lot of research. He says, the police don't take.
Well, he's not a psychic private detective.
He's a private detective that focuses on psychics. Yeah.
Yes.
But they think,
just to be clear,
it's a victimless crime. You should have known better. They blame the victim. The victims are almost always women. So, you know, whether that has anything to do with it or not, I don't know. But people don't come forward. They don't know how to come forward. They don't know who to report it to, and so on. So, of course. So, and there's tons of money in it, just tons. And like I said, the networks just say, oh, everybody knows this isn't real.
Hello, my name is Dr. Kayla Black, and I'm a clinical psychologist, professor, author, and the director of the Secular Therapy Project. In case you aren't familiar with it, the Secular Therapy Project is a program of recovering from religion that aims to help secular, non-religious people find good mental health care. Specifically, we screen our therapists to make sure that they're appropriately licensed, use the most evidence-based types of therapy, and that they are secular and non-religious themselves. This helps ensure that science and reason are what guides your therapist, not personal religious beliefs. If you'd like to learn more, or to look for a mental health professional yourself, or if you'd like to apply to be one of our therapists, please visit us online at seculartherapy.org.
And if there's a few that don't, well, you know.
Yeah, we've had that pushback at Wikipedia. So as I mentioned, Susan does the Gorilla Skeptic Wikipedia project. And like we try to interject skepticism in articles about psychics and on people who claim they're psychic. And well, every Wikipedia article has a talk page where the editors who work on the page, who are interested in the page, talk about what should be in the article, right? And we've actually had people, oh, you don't have to tell people that this isn't real. Everyone knows this isn't real.
No.
There's all kinds of levels of things, just amazing things. I have a really good friend who's got an article coming out in Skeptical Inquirer right now. Any day now, I'm waiting for it to publish, but she did a thing on romance scams because she got scammed through a romance scam. And, you know, a lot of people, you would think everybody knew, you don't do that. You don't buy gift cards for strange men you've met on the internet and so on. But she said, I've never really watched reality TV. I've never watched any, I didn't know what the term catfish meant, any of that. She said, it just didn't occur to me. I thought I was being skeptical, but actually I wasn't. And I didn't realize it. And so it happens all the time.
Yeah, that is so sad. And it's the same thing that you're talking about. It's, you know, people who are desperate for connection, you know.
Absolutely. Oh, I hate that. Everybody doesn't know everything. I remember many years ago, I was training a new employee when I was working, and they put foil, this big old thing of foil in the microwave. And I thought, doesn't everybody know you don't put foil in the microwave? And obviously they didn't know that you don't put foil in the microwave. So
I literally had this conversation with someone at my workplace the other day. They were heating up an entire meal wrapped in foil. I said, wait a minute, you're not supposed to put foil in the microwave. And she goes, oh, really? I never heard that before. Yeah, there's people that haven't heard things that you've heard.
Right. It doesn't mean they're dumb. It just means that they just have not heard that piece of information before. It's not something wrong with them. It's just, they didn't know.
So speaking of information, so when people say, well, there's no way they could have known that, how could they have done that? So what are the techniques that you've learned by researching these people?
Is
the way that they can convince people that what they're doing is real?
It's so clever. I mean, some of these things, well, they've been going on forever. I mean, people have done hot reading and cold reading for ages, but cold reading is the most common way it appears that they are real. And that's just by making assumptions about people, making bold statements as if they're real. And human beings are more alike than they are different. So if you make something with confidence, a statement, it's more likely going to hit somehow. You know, generalities about a person, you know, we can look at a lot of the people on the screen here. We can make assumptions about their age, their voice, their religiosity, their culture, all kinds of things, just even looking at a person's name. And so what ends up happening is that with cold reading, they're just throwing things out. And it's a lot of it is manipulation of language. So humans want to connect. We badly want to connect. We're a species that we want to be human.
Hardwired.
Well, we're hardwired, yeah, to be in a group that's safe. So what happens is we're looking for a way of making sure we make a connection with somebody. So if a person's standing in front of us, let's say we're at a party and you're forced to talk to this person for a few minutes, and you're going to try to find something in common with them. You're going to be like, so where do you work? What is it? Have you read any good books lately? Have you seen a movie? And you're looking, going through this whole litany of things, hoping upon hope that one of those things is going to connect. You went to the same school. You both have a sister named Sarah, you know, something, so that you can hit on it and make a connection. And so when the psychics are working with you, a lot of times they will be just going through a whole series of things, but the way they word it, for an example, Matt Frazier, this is one of the one of the Grief Vampires. The TV show,
Meet the Frasers.
Meet the Frasers, yeah. So one of the people we met, people will tell me all the time, I've had this reading, there's no way the person could have known about it. But when you get down to the meat of it, and you listen to it and you transcribe it, transcribing is really great, and you really look at the words, he had this one woman, he pulled her up in the audience and he said something about, well, first off, he could judge just from her age of the woman standing up. She probably does not have a father who's still alive. And, you know, he says, I'm getting an older man standing behind you. Well, it could be almost anybody, right? But right off the bat, it was her father. No kidding. Odds of that are really good. And then he was saying something about the dogs. And again, who has not had something about a dog, either living next door to a dog, owned a dog, frightened of dogs, allergic to dogs, something dog. And she gave him the information. She said, yes, we've always had a lot of dogs. And he says something about, oh, the German shepherds. And she's like, yeah.
Shocking. Kind of, one of the most popular and common breeds in the U.S.
Yes, we looked that up, except during World War II. There was a narrow time when they weren't that popular in America.
German Shepherd, I get it.
German Shepherds, yeah, I get it. But then they went right back to being very popular.
Like, yeah. Oh, wow.
Poor dogs. Wow. So, so whenever you listen to it later, if you were to have interviewed that woman, she would say, oh, he hit right on the fact that my dad had these dogs. And anybody else listening would say, oh my gosh, he got it right on the button about these German Shepherds. But if you read the transcript, nowhere in there was he claiming she had German Shepherds. He just said, what about these German Shepherds? I mean, they could have been next door neighbor's dogs. They could have been anything. But she's latching on to it because spiritualism, this mediumship is just, there's no there's no science to it, but there's no, it's vague, you know, and it could fall away really quickly. So when the medium has finally picked you out of the crowd and you've been there for, you know, you paid all this money and you're finally there out of a room of 500 people or whatever, and they're right in front of you, they know darn well that if the connection kind of gets fuzzy, he's going to walk away and go somewhere else. So you want to hold on to that guy's attention because any minute now he's really going to get to the real good stuff. So the person who's being read, we call them a sitter, even if they're not sitting, is going to agree to everything or try to agree. They're not going to go, no, we've never had anything to do with dogs. I don't know what you're talking about with German Shepherds, because the medium's just going to move on. Oh, that must be the person over here.
They'll give the benefit of the doubt. They'll stretch it out to anything they can possibly connect.
Forcing to look for a connection. They'll be thinking, I've seen a picture of a German Shepherd, so maybe that's what it is, you know?
Right.
Anything right. But to they hold just say on yes. to that little right. that little thread that is just right there, because any minute now the medium is going to give me the information I'm looking for, you know, about my dad. So as humans, we're trying so hard to find a connection with somebody, and of course we're going to do that. So that's cold reading. And that's the most popular.
Right. And that's the kind, if someone says, I'm seeing someone with a J name or an M name.
Oh, yeah, that's
right.
Cold reading.
On the other hand, if they say, I'm seeing Mary Smith and she lived at 345 County Road, that's probably hot reading. Hot reading.
Right. So hot reading is what I specialize in. And that is, and there's only some mediums that do this. And there's no way a medium is going to hot read and still believe that they're real, because it's right.
Well, I'll go
it's
back.
So if you do, you're cold looking reading, for information. It's like I looked at your guys's name.
Right, Susan. If you do cold reading well enough, you can convince yourself that you have this talent and it's real. Right.
Yes.
Right, because from confirmation bias and motivated reasoning, it's a reinforcing thing. If they keep saying yes to you, you sort of believe that. Mm-hmm. Right, but hot reading, as you said, if someone does kind of a thing. So what is hot reading exactly?
Hot reading would be if I looked for somebody on this screen right here who has an unusual name, that's better. This is what we saw during the pandemic a lot, is you got a Zoom with this many names on it and you would look for somebody on here. Well, Daryl Ray, I mean, I could, that's an unusual kind of name. If I was to Google Daryl Ray, I would find content, right? I mean,
it is Wikipedia article.
Yeah, Wikipedia article.
Gold mine.
And you could go from Wikipedia article to some of the citations and get some of the more obscure stuff, probably. But you look around and you see, I mean, I wouldn't pick on Daniela Stewart because that's kind of a common name. You know, I wouldn't find anything there. Marshall Russell, Michael McNeely. No, I wouldn't call in any of these people. Linda Rosa. Well, hi, Linda. I know her. But some of the people who have a little more unusual names, I would probably look them up, or my partner would be looking them up right now and doing a, not necessarily a Google search. We would probably use Facebook, because another thing a lot of people do is the event is advertised on Facebook for the event we're on. Like right now, if we were on a psychic thing here, what would happen is the people who are here would probably go to Facebook and say, I'll be at your event. This is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. Well, I can look at the Facebook page too, probably, and click on the link and see your information. It's not really hard. It's not like you're hiding it. But the people who we really want, the ones we get the most out of, are those women. And like I said, it's almost all women. And they use their maiden name and hyphenate it with their married name. Oh my gosh. If we find the obituaries for your father and your grandfather and your mother, you just go to legacy.com and you put in a few keywords and I'm there.
But you're just speculating, Susan, right? You've never actually caught anybody doing this sort of thing, have you?
No, not today. A couple days ago, let's talk about this.
Probably the most famous one that was written up by the New York Times Magazine. So what happened there?
So that was just a fluke. You know, we had done a few stings in the past, Operation Bumblebee, Operation Ice Cream Cone, and then I just happened to be going down to LA, and one of my friends said, "Hey, there's this guy who's going to be over here and kind of where you're going to be, when you're going to be there. Why don't you put together a sting?" And I was like, oh, I have no idea who this guy is. And so all we did is we created some Facebook pages. The Facebook pages had existed in the past. We just cleaned them off. And Mark Edward and myself said, let's go. So we changed our names on these fake Facebook pages to Susanna Forsyth Wilson, hyphenated, and Mark Wilson, because that's what we had ID that would actually kind of say that we could if we had a show ID. Somebody else created the pages. Somebody else changed the names on it. Somebody else put our profile pictures on those Facebook pages. And Mark and I had no contact with those Facebook pages. We didn't even know the URL to get into them. And so what they did is for 10 days, a team of people in a small Facebook group just sat there and they would update the pages and they put all this content on there and they have discussions about work and dreams we were having and how somebody had twisted an ankle and lost their keys and just, oh, hey, you know, Suzanne, I see you keep talking about how your twin brother, Andy, who had died of pancreatic cancer is appearing to you in dreams. And you're really kind of thinking maybe he's trying to send you a message, but you just aren't really understanding what the message is. So it's much more nuanced than this. I'm being kind of blatant explaining it to you. It was all kind of done like at a drawn out conversation between friends on Facebook. And so reading between the lines, you can see I'm trying to get a hold of my twin brother who died of pancreatic cancer a couple of years before. His name is Andy. He was married to somebody named Maria. And Mark had a father who had heart problems, and that Mark was having problems thinking to himself that he's about the age his father was when his dad died. So now he's starting to think he might have heart problems and he's going to the... So anyway, so they're having these conversations and they're putting other things on the Facebook page to make them look real, like memes and, you know, talking about movies and
your dog, buddy, the dog.
Yeah. Somebody named, and about a dog. Wouldn't it be funny if your dog buddy showed up? Oh, that dog was so stupid. He wouldn't have even come if you called him. I doubt he's going to show up at the event, you know, whenever I go to see the psychic and somebody's like, well, this guy here, he seems really good. Tagging the psychic, you know, putting his name in the feed. He seems pretty good. I think you should go check him out. I'm like, I don't know. And so, in other words, we're letting the psychic know we're going to be coming to see him on this event.
Well, not
and it
you.
Goes through that way.
Those two fake people are going to come to see
him. Well, the two fake people, yes.
Right.
And other people are like, I'm going to go with you. And then it's like, oh, I couldn't go. I couldn't get the date time off from work. I'm going to be, I can't do it. So I'm not going to get the ticket and go. Just looks like real people. So mm-hmm. Mark and I have no idea what's going on. So all we know is that I have a brother who's a twin who died of pancreatic cancer a few years ago. And Mark knows that he has some distance between him and his father. I don't know what that means. Heart problems. He's worried about it. He's had some tests done. That's what we know. So when we show up to the venue, and this is, we bought the VIP tickets. So it's $160-something a person. So, because you can't do this if you're sitting in the back. You have to be in the front. You have to be...
Because people who only pay 50 or 60 or 70, there's too many of them for him to call on them, is what you're saying.
Well, and there's no initiative. There's no monetary value for getting somebody. I mean, why would they care about the person who's in the back?
And they haven't demonstrated their commitment to this process yet.
Right. That's true,
too. People who believe are in the front.
Right. So and because later, by the way, you're going to get to the story what happened, but by demonstrating that you're willing to pay that kind of money, you're more likely to go for a private reading with them.
Yes.
Which costs
coins. Absolutely. The $400 or $500 or more. So you're really trying to show if I get called on in this, I might just buy a private reading because, you know. So anyway, so we sit down. Mark and I came to the venue prepared to be cold red. So like I had a Scottish pin on and we had wedding rings, even though we weren't married. And he had a military pin from the Marines and he has nothing to do with the military. And so we had these cold reading things, you know, dressed up a little bit, tissue in our pockets. So Mark is an expert on psychics, and you can check out his book called Psychic Blues, The Confessions of a Conflicted Medium. So he's an expert on all this.
And no, he is not related to the other Edwards.
Not related to John Edward, no. So Mark has this, he says, you always carry a tissue, put it in your pocket, and then you really just spin it, you just knot it up like this, and it just really, you know, get into your Kleenex there for a while. But anyway, so we went and sat down. I think we're the third row, maybe 50 people there. And I was wired with a wire to record through my back and it was all turned on and everything. But when we get there, they said, hey, I hope everybody's, you know, recording this. And I'm like, oh, all right, I'll pull out my phone and turn it on publicly. And he, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into on this.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
anyway, so there was a reading way in the back that was very specific. Somebody he hit on right away. And then there was a woman across from us who was wearing green. We call her the lady in green. And that was specific. And she was just, you know, with her tissue. And Mark nudges me. And he says, she ain't crying. We're like, he's like, she's in on it. So, you know, and then it was my turn. And so I have to know something, because the way this medium worked is he gets up in the audience in the front and he never leaves the stage, not once. He's right there standing totally still for 2 hours. He picks up and he says, I'm getting a twin who wants to be in contact with their sister. And I'm like very tentatively raising my hand. I think that's me. And they come over with a microphone and a box of Kleenex. And I said, I think that's me. And he went right off. He says, you know, he died of something here in the stomach area. I think it's pancreatic cancer. And I'm like, whoa. You know, I act like bingo. I'm crying and I'm like, yes. And then he says, I think he said his name's Andy. And I said, yes. And then he's trying to send you signs through music. And I'm just agreeing to it because at that point I'm done. Cause I only know a limited amount. Cause this is, we call, you know, we're double blinding this. And this is something a lot of skeptics don't do, is they don't double blind it. The person who has all the information.
The reason for this was because you knew if this came out, he would say, oh, he was confused. He was reading your mind. Cause you had all this information in your mind and he was doing ESP on you. So this way, no, I didn't even know the stuff.
I don't know anything except for the very enough for me to raise my hand. That's it. Oh,
so we'll be back just, to so you just, you're going to go along with what he's saying, like it's correct, absolutely. But you don't actually know whether he's even right. Describing and what so was on if the I remember page or not.
The buddy, the dog thing caused some problems for you.
Right. So I should mention too, before we got there, well, when we got there to the venue, we had to stay in character the whole time. We go to the venue. And I text the people who are running the fake Facebook pages and I say, we're here. I take a picture of the venue and then I send the picture to the people who are running the Facebook pages. And then they put up that picture I just sent and they say, And they put it on the fake Facebook pages saying something like, oh my gosh, I was here as a kid, or I can't believe this place has changed that much. Checking in and tagging the psychic again. So it's another way of saying, we're here right now. We just walked in, and how exciting that, you know, we are to be here. And reiterating, I sure hope I get in contact with my brother who died of pancreatic cancer, and his name is Andy, you know, that kind of thing. So things are happening on the Facebook pages, but we have no access to. And the only people who have access are people living far away and the psychic who is being tagged. That's the only people who know what's going on in those Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. So we go in and we sit down, and he's called on us. And I'm crying, and I'm crying out of joy, because as soon as he went to me and said, I'm getting a twin brother whose name is Andy.
We got you.
Pancreatic cancer. I'm like, I can't believe how easy that was. That was so easy. I'm like thrilled. It's the first time I've really caught somebody on mic that closely. And so anyway, so he goes on, and then he's up there and he starts talking about other stuff on our Facebook page. We don't got no clue. So we're just
like, who's buddy, Susan?
Oh, and buddy. And then I look at Mark, and Mark looks at me, because he says, who's buddy? And I said, that was your brother's nickname. And he's like, no, it's your brother's nickname. Like, oh, I had a brother's nickname. I was just so emotional. You know, you just,
we named the dog Buddy.
The dog
after my brother, Buddy. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And then who's Steve?
It's your uncle. Like, everyone's
my brother's name friend was named Steve. Well, it turned out to be Mark's dad. So we didn't know.
Somebody's uncle.
Somebody's name Steve. So we
did it look like he was getting suspicious at this point that you were?
Well, of course he's suspicious. No. But what does it matter? We've already caught him. And every word he utters is making it, burying himself even further and showing that I don't know. I mean, every time he says Buddy is a dog, or if he says Steve is his dad, we don't know. If we knew, we'd play along, but we don't know. So we just, Steve's law. So we just went with it. So our turn ends. Sure, he's suspicious, but he's never heard of me. He doesn't know what's going on. Susan Gerbig isn't, and Mark Edward are not connected in any way, because our Facebook pages are on our own Facebook pages are just pure. There's nothing on there. And why would he even know we'd be there? Because he's not psychic. But I mean, there's no way he can connect us. I wasn't even on his radar. I live hours away from LA. So so we're sitting there and it's over. Finally, he's called on a few other people. And the woman, remember I said the very first reading, she comes up and she's like, oh, that is so nice that you guys got called on. That's so sweet. And she says, I have a black Labrador also, but his name isn't Buddy. And we're like, oh, okay, that's nice. And I think we said something to her, and this is all on audio. So you've had readings from him before? And she's, oh yes, we just did a spirit circle recently. You know, I'm being read by him all the time. And I'm thinking, well, no wonder he knew your whole story and he was able to relate it back to you. He sees you in the audience. He's like, okay, what is this woman? She's got this, and this going on. He just says it. And why would she doubt it? She believes him. It's a form of hot reading when you've had somebody read in front of you and you just repeat back the stuff. She said to me, oh, this time I think my grandmother came through. I'm thinking, this time, huh? And she says, yeah, we've had multiple readings from him. I just had a spirit circle with him. And I'm thinking, well, you know, the woman in front of me is probably in her late 60s or 70s. So yeah, your grandmother's probably dead, you know? So that's pretty obvious.
So Susan, you eventually got to go to the VIP room and
take selfies
with him. And he realized because of his psychic power that you were there and you were a fraud, right?
Of course not. He didn't catch on anything. So we go to VIP. First thing we see is there's probably 20 people in there, and it's just us and the psychic, and he looks exhausted, and he's handing out his copy of his book. You know, they handed it out so we can get him autographed. So we got his book. And the woman in green is sitting there, and I flash my camera and I take a picture of the room, you know, just take a picture of the room. And there she is sitting there, and she hands her book to him and says, so this time, don't spell my name wrong. And I thought, this time? Okay, that's interesting. And he takes her book and he autographs it to her and hands it back. I'm thinking, how did he know your name? That's some psychic, you know, he didn't even ask you how to spell your name, what your name was. And then we get into the Q&A, and I'm standing in the back, and I'm playing my part. And he said something about students. And I said, students, you have students, you teach people? And he goes over and lays his hand on that woman in green and says, yes, I have some amazing students. And I'm thinking, boy, I've just caught you like 12 times tonight.
And wait a minute. That's the person that he called on in a reading, like he never knew them and was giving all details about them.
And she was crying when she wasn't crying. So yeah, so we know exactly who that person is now. We're following her around too now because she's a medium also.
Well, and just let me back up a little bit. Despite all of that, he still spelled her name wrong.
No, she's saying don't spell my name wrong this time.
But like, I mean, so he spelled her name wrong the last time, even though she's a
just
plant.
Because you can communicate with the dead, just because you communicate with the dead card doesn't mean you're good at spelling. You know.
Her name is Kate, and she spells it with a C, and I guess he spelled it with a K last time. It's a student. I don't know. Maybe she's paying cash. She never saw her credit card.
It's so, almost worse somehow now that I know that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. It's like, you know, I like telling these stories to people because people come up with stuff different every time. So we learned a lot about that. And when we left, I'm texting people in the Facebook group. I'm like, okay, who was smoking and quit smoking? And they're like, I don't know. I don't know anything about somebody who's smoking because the psychic was adamant that somebody had quit smoking and it was my twin brother. And I said, yeah, okay, he quit smoking. You're right. I just agreed to anything he said. And then what happened is we get the audio, give it to the people who have the Facebook pages, and we start going through it, you know, making a transcript and so on. And some of the things we noticed were that, you know how, because we'd reuse these Facebook pages many times. So one of those life events had been on the Facebook page for my twin brother, died of pancreatic cancer. It's very sad. His name is Andy. And so that Facebook page, which was fake, I don't have a twin brother and none of that's real. So they went to the Facebook page and it had a life event saying that he had quit smoking. So that's where he got that from. Because Mark tried to say his brother quit smoking and the psychic argued with us and said, no, it's not him. It's the twin's brother. I'm like,
okay, well, maybe yes. Two people quit smoking. I don't know.
You know, so he got it from there. Another thing is he kept going on about Michigan. I don't know anything about Michigan. I wasn't prepped to anything about Michigan. I asked my team, what's this about Michigan? And they said, we don't know anything about Michigan. Nobody put anything about Michigan. But one of the things we noticed is somebody had put a filler picture, you know, just a picture of a waterfall. And it was from Cornwall Park or something like that, which is in England. So, but if you Google the name, the first hit on a Google search is a place in Michigan.
Oh, and so they're even like exposing their Googling errors.
Yes.
It was incredible. And they went on about the dog and how could I not know about the dog, buddy? And I'm like, I don't know about a dog and something about some jewelry in a box. And oh, it was horrible. Really horrible.
So Susan, let me ask you. Yes. So this was just a random no name person, right? Not famous at all. Never on television.
Well, he was nobody I'd ever heard of before, but he had a TV show called Seatbelt Psychic, and that had one
that guy.
Wait, I feel like we've heard about this guy before. Yeah, Seatbelt maybe Psychic. Last week.
Seatbelt Psychic. So it's Thomas John, and he had a TV show. It was on, was it Lifetime? I get them all mixed up.
He actually had two different series and two different networks.
Right, but right? The first one was the one we were there, and I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't paid. I was like, whatever, let's go do this. You know, this will be a fun experience. We put it together in 10 days. The first sting I did, Operation Bumblebee.
Let's stick with this, Susan.
I'm not going to go with it, but it took us. Okay. We put those Facebook pages together for months. We were working on them.
Yeah.
So this was 10 days. I didn't think we were going to get a hit.
So I was kind of joking that this is like a no-name person who doesn't care about being embarrassed like this. But this is a person with a
TV tell show. Everybody.
And then he got another TV show on a different network. I think after Craig Rickenmark? After the New York Times Magazine exposed him. Right, because they don't care. And also, let's see, Glenda might know about
Caesar's
this. He became the house show at Caesar's Palace, also after he was exposed.
Uh-huh.
The Thomas John Experience.
There's always a psychic show going on in Vegas. They're really popular, and there's some medium, at any point, there's like a medium show somewhere on the strip. Yeah.
We had Caesar's Cleopatra Lounge, and we sent in teams to go in and record and watch. And
right, so I was going to ask you.
They went in and they interviewed people. After that, right? Talked
you
about.
You followed up to see how he was performing his act in the lounge there. Oh, but by the way, it started in early 2020, right? And then he had it scheduled out for the whole year, of course, not seeing the pandemic was going to close everything down.
Yeah, we've got screenshots of him talking about. One of my slides for PsyCon is going to be, it has a picture of the slide where he's saying, hey, everybody, you know, Ticketmaster now has our tickets all the way through July. So make sure you get your tickets. It's like, you didn't see the pandemic coming, did you?
I hope somebody screen capped that.
Oh, everything's screenshot. Everything's archived or screenshot. I'm absolutely a firm believer
in
that.
Susan actually wrote an article. They didn't see it coming with those kinds of things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, he didn't see it coming. But the thing about the Vegas thing was not only that, is that everything online we could see. So we were following his Ticketmaster, and they have an arena. You can see where people sit. And you buy a ticket, you sit in a seat, and that ticket should have some name and, you know, it's easy to hot read somebody. But we were watching that every day and discussing it. We could see some seats in there that would never, there were always had people in it. I don't care if the room was empty and there was no one in that place, but always these same seats were always sold out. So, you know, what was up with that? And we were able to follow it. We could see everything, all the seating arrangements, how he was failing almost from the beginning to sell seats, how they were putting, I have people who are in the skeptic community that are friends that were, they live in Vegas, that were following all this. They could see that the tickets were almost immediately put on these like almost free thing or $5, anything to get a butt in the seat. We could see how it was failing right at the beginning. It was incredible. And so we would also, oh, the woman in green, the same one who was a student, she showed up. We watched her social media talking about how she's going to go to something special. And we're like, I know where she's headed. And then here she is. She shows up at the event. And one of my team members went over and had a nice long conversation with her afterwards. And as an attendee, you know, you're just hanging around and talking to people. Another woman who would show up at the his events, she showed up multiple of times. And my team member went over and talked to her, and she says, yeah, I get read every time I come here. My dead people want to talk to me every time. She didn't know that she was a stooge. It was incredible how they just think that, you know, they're always getting read every time. Well, it makes sense.
So talking about not knowing you're a stooge, talk about, so you've written articles not only about this, and that was reported on the New York Times, but you've written articles busting what happened on his shows, right? Seatbelt Psychic, right? So people who don't know about the show, the setup is he's an Lyft or an Uber driver. I don't think they make it specific, but he drives up, he opens a door, somebody gets in, and then he starts talking about their dead relatives, you know, what the dead relative wants to talk to them, right? And this is the name of the show, is Seatbelt Psychic. So Susan sat down with the help of a team and analyzed in detail what was actually going on there. Take it away, Susan.
Well, before the New York Times article came out, I went and said, all right, I don't know if you understand this, but the New York Times, those things are extensive. They write the article, and they have to do a lot of fact checking. It could take 6 months or more before the article actually appears. Same with Washington Post. But so our article was written. The person who was doing the journalist actually went to a different event we did. We had to put on another event on another medium in a whole different part of the United States. We called it Operation Peach Pit. Matt Fraser. And we did that so that the reporter could go and watch how I built the team. He sat in and all the sessions I had with the team members, just sitting in the background, just watching and so on. So it takes a long time. So it didn't publish this article. I'm like, well, gosh, what's taken so freaking long? It's been like a year since we did this thing. And so I said, all right, I'm going to go and research Seatbelt Psychic. And I did. I sat down and watched the show, and it was so obvious that it was hot reading because, oh gosh, there's so many ways. One of the things we found out is that at the end of the show, there's credits. And in the credits, it says casting assistant, casting, you know, all these people. And it's like, if the only person on the show is the psychic and everybody else is just random people get in the back seat, why would you need a cast? What, somebody, a whole team of people handling the cast? Who are they casting? Right. And then the other thing is that we figured out who the people were in the back seat, and some of them have IMDb profiles. And on their IMD profiles, you can see who they are. You can see that they're whatever it is he called out, like, you know, your dog and is there. And then on their IMD profile, there is the pictures of dogs all over this woman's page. It was just so obvious. Plus, there's cameras all over this thing. If you've ever seen Cash Cab, those people who are getting into the back seat and acting surprised, I have news for you. They knew they were getting into a cash cab. It's all scripted. There's massive cameras on top and on the side, all over that car. You can't miss it. You can't walk up and go, gee, we're getting into this thing and all these lights start flashing. No, it's obvious. You have to sign waivers. The person who's driving you is not a professional Lyft driver or whatever. You have to sign something to get into that car for insurance reasons. So it's not like, you know, people just don't get that. I don't know if it's as a society, we haven't understood that reality TV is probably the most unreality out there. It's not real.
What? No.
I know. I'm sorry. Neither is Santa Claus. But anyway, so
you
have to bleep that part, Kara, when you're
public. Yeah, we can't put that out there.
So it's just they don't think about it, you know. People think if you see two people having an intimate conversation on TV, that it's just these two people having an intimate conversation. They forget there's a room of people with cameras and booms and people with clipboards and, you know, food set up. They forget there's a ton of people in that room with them. If it's done right, you get lost in the story and you think it's just those two people. But no, that's not what happened.
So the thing that got me asking about this, though, was your previous comment, I think, was about like the not knowing that they were, you know, part of it. So is it possible, or maybe even likely, that the people who got into the back of his car were hired, but they didn't know what for, and they certainly didn't know that he was going to feed them information from their social media?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good question too, Rob, because I did interview one person who got into that back seat. We found him accidentally during the pandemic. And he filled out information on like a Craigslist for a game show. That's what he thought. So when he showed up to the venue on that day and filled up even more forms and saw tables with people on it, you know, with forms and like drinks and stuff like that. And then here comes the car that pulls up with all these cameras all over it. I mean, they're watching you get from the curb into the car. So there's a camera, they're watching you do that. So, you know, he knew he was getting into something. He knew.
Right.
But he told me, I thought it was going to be on like Sally, Jesse, Raphael or something.
Right. So I could see it from their perspective. They don't know what they're hired for. They're hired. So the people who hire them know everything about them, clearly. Right. And they feed it to somebody who feeds it to Thomas John or directly, perhaps. But they don't know that that's what's going to happen. And maybe their emotional response
is genuinely surprised.
Right. When he starts telling them stuff that he's got no way of knowing.
Well, keep in mind also, some people are like that, but we see this with Tyler Henry on his shows too. If you are an actor, especially if you're like a B or a C actor, you know, your flame has died out, you know, years ago, like Boy George or Nancy Grace or people that we kind of heard of, but you know, what happened to them? I thought they were dead kind of thing. They get on to these psychic shows. And if you are not playing up, you know, if you're not like big expressions like, oh my gosh, there's no way you could have known that, you're edited out of the show. You're not going to be on the camera. And if you want the attention and you want the fame, you have to play it up. And that's what's also happening in those back seats of the car too. If when they got in there and they realized what's going on, some people did definitely really start crying and not knowing.
Right.
That they were being hot, you know, they thought there was really a, you know,
somebody. And the other part of it, of course, Susan,
they're acting out.
You mentioned in your other articles on these kinds of things, anything that's on television is edited. I mean, you don't know if one of the people said, hey, I know what you guys did. That doesn't become a show.
No, it absolutely does not become a show. And we know it was edited because during the pandemic, we went back to Seatbelt Psychic. We watched the show, the YouTube videos, and we turned off the audio. So all we could do is see what was going on in the screen. And every time we could look through Thomas John's window of his car or the back seat of the car, you could see the outside, we did screenshots. So we took all those screenshots and we could see he was on a route and we could see it was just circling. And we could hear, and then when you go back and you would see he would, in the show, he would do it, he'd be talking to somebody in the back seat. The camera's just on him. It's just on his face. You can't see what's going on. And then it focuses on the people in the back seat. We could see that he was having one conversation with them. And you could see in the background something that was noticeable, you know, a tree or something that was distinct, or parked cars right here that are stopped at a stoplight in a mini mall over here. You could see that. And then he would go and the conversation would continue like a minute or so later. And then when the conversation continued, they're in the exact same spot, like at a freeway. They're going down a freeway and there's graffiti. You can see the graffiti. It was cropped. It was edited so that it looked more accurate. And I point that out in one of the articles. I have an article, the most recent one about Seatbelt Psychic. It's called Right Turns Only. Buckle up.
Right. So you basically plotted, you and your team watched all of these. I don't know how you.
Yeah, we could see he's going in a giant circle.
Giant circle.
Everybody, and it's always in the closest lane to the curb, because of course he's not a professional driver. For insurance reasons, you have to do that. And we could see in the back of the car, we could see a car constantly following them. Probably the one that had the connection to him. You know, he's saying, I've never met these people in my life. I don't know them. He very well could have never have met them before and never have known them. I totally believe that. But it doesn't mean somebody else didn't and it wasn't feeding it to him. Or the dead were contacted, you know, the dead people who were he was reading were actually reading the social media of their family and friends and feeding it to him. So I don't know. Somehow somebody was reading social media of the people who got in the backseat of the car. And if you want to be on the trailer, if you want to get the biggest segment on the show, you got to really play it up. You got to be, you know, oh my gosh. And you watch these people, they get in the back seat. They're actors, you know, they're acting. They have IMDb profiles.
So these are adults, right? These are actors. They're adults.
I don't really know.
Right. Like he wouldn't take advantage of children, would he?
Isn't Rob great? I just love this guy. So, I would never have thought he would have crossed the line to go into readings for children. That was kind of a shock.
Yeah. Did he do something like that?
You know, it was Christmas, right before Christmas of 2021. And we saw this post come up saying he was going to do a spirit reading, spirit circle for children as young as five to 12, eight of them. And we thought, oh no, don't do that. That's, you know, it's one thing. Adults, right, who are grieving and desperate and vulnerable, but oh my gosh, these are kids.
But at least he was doing it for free, right?
Oh my gosh, $400, 2 hours. And I just realized it the other day. That was during school hours too. It was a Zoom session in April during school hours. So these kids had to take 2 hours out of their day with their parent, because you had to have a parent there. And it was always a mom. And they went. And we tried to get it canceled. We tried our best to get the darn thing canceled. And he just was like, no, we're going to do it anyway. And it's almost sold out. Like in January, he's talking about, you got to get your tickets soon. It's almost sold out. So I couldn't get it canceled. And it came down to the wire where, you know, it was really weighing on me. I was thinking, this is going to happen. There's nothing I can do. It's going to happen. So I really need to kind of know what's going on. We can't let this pass. This is an opportunity. So we got a hold of a TV reporter for NBC who said, I want to go. I want to film this and all that. And we're like, there are 8 people on the screen and the medium. So 9 people are on the screen. How can you possibly go and not know? Because the reporter can't be part of the story. They have to be observing. Mm-hmm. So we thought, what the heck are we going to do? And she's like, no, we're going to do a story on this. And I said, you don't understand. I want it canceled. She goes, yeah, I know you want it canceled, but we want to film it. And so I said, oh, how am I going to do this? And you know how humans are, when you have to do it, you kind of just find a way of doing it. So I did. I figured out how you can have 9 people on the screen and a 10th person could enter and nobody would notice. And so we did that and we recorded, and the NBC reporter ghosted me. She didn't show. But we still went ahead anyway.
So there were 8 people who paid, right?
8 people in a meeting.
8 people paid. And it would have been really interesting if you were able to get like a plant in there and somebody to go undercover.
Well, it was all sold out, Rob. It's been sold out almost since January and there's only 8 seats. He kept going on about how there's like, it's almost sold out. So 4 days before the event, I said, I got to get in here. So the only way to get in there is to buy a ticket. $400 is a lot. I'm going to send somebody in. So where are you going to find somebody who's 5 to 12-year-olds who's willing to sit there for 2 hours with their parent? You either got to find somebody who's like old who could look 12, but that was really hard. I couldn't figure that out. So Mark suggested this one person we know who was at SciCon a few years ago. She's a science writer. She was 13 at the time. And he said, why don't you get a hold of Bailey Harris? And you guys in the RFR might know Bailey Harris. She's an atheist and she writes science and secular stories, children's stories about evolution and
she has the My Name is Stardust series written for
children.
It's being translated thanks to the Dawkins Foundation into all of the languages in Muslim majority countries now.
Yeah, really extraordinary woman. I met her at SciCon and I sent her a message and said, hey Bailey, I don't know what you're doing these days, but you know, I got this thing. You're 14 now. Could you play a 12-year-old? Would you give up your time to do this? I'm going to pay for your ticket. And by the way, I need to know like in a couple hours. And she's like, well, okay, I'll do it. And her dad was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I said, well, Douglas, I really would like your wife to do it because it's not a men thing. It's just not. Very few men go. And if they do go, they're almost always taken by a woman and they reluctantly go.
So that would make Thomas John suspicious perhaps then.
Yes.
Yeah. Very suspicious. So I want to come back to that in a minute, but finish this part of the story first.
Okay. So, gosh, I feel sorry for you guys who are listening to this. This is so much. Articles are written about this, by the way, and you can find out all the details on our website, abouttimeproject.org. So it's there. Everything's there for everything I'm saying. So just letting you know, if I don't cover it, the answer is somewhere. So what I did is I made fake emails. I did not have time to make fake Facebook pages. There's just no way. The pandemic was on. We weren't vaccinated. I wasn't leaving my house. I have to come up with $400 in cash because I have to buy a Visa gift card because you can't use your own gift card. Your own Visa.
What? Hold on, wait, back up. So this is so shady that you can't even pay for it with the way you would normally purchase a ticket.
Absolutely not. After Operation Pizza Roll, Mark Edward and Susan Gerbic had no connection with the characters that played. We didn't reveal it anywhere.
I think Susan meant she didn't want to reveal her actual identity.
Because they'll know who I am. But after Operation Pizza Roll, the one the New York Times wrote up, a couple days after the event, I got a tweet from Thomas John with a little heart on it, a little heart, and that's all it said. And it's the only way he could have known it was me was either he's really psychic, which we know he isn't, or he happened to look at how I paid. Because I didn't really think it was going to be a big deal, but I used my actual Visa card when I bought the tickets to go to the event. You know, we paid for it with my Susan Gerbic's account. So he definitely looks at the bank account of the person who's buying the ticket.
Because he's doing hot readings, which means...
Well, I think he did it after the fact because he didn't see me coming. No way. Not
shocking.
For the first one. Not for the first one. But this time we knew he would. Especially since there's only 8 people there. So I had to go get cash. I had to go to a CVS and buy a gift card. And then I had to come back and buy the ticket. I'm thinking it's sold out, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we got a ticket. And I got it in the name of a name that's not Googleable. It was like Joe Martin. It was like, you know.
Something real generic.
Very generic. And I opened up a fake email, Google email for Joe Martin. And I bought the ticket with that. I gave an actual address because you have to give an address. So I went on to Google and I found an address of an apartment complex and gave that. I gave, you know, everything was, if he checked, it wouldn't be suspicious at all. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to him an email under the cover of being Joe Martin. And I said, my daughter is really excited, you know, but she's had a lot of problems with COVID. Her classmate's father died of COVID and she's very scared. Her older brother has left the house. He doesn't want to be with the COVID precautions. He's on his own. He's out there in the wild, you know, he's living who knows where. And here, and I gave him his name. So when I went to Bailey Harris, I said, here's your undercover. It's just that you're worried about COVID and you have a brother who has left the house. I think is about all I told her. And I just sent one email to Thomas John and I get a response saying, you know, oh, we're so looking forward to, you know, whatever. And then the day before I get another email saying, what's the name of the child? Cause he wants to meditate, you know.
Like, meditate. Right. Okay.
Right. Meditate. So what we did is we funneled all the information into one email. Mm-hmm. There was no way he could know anything about the person I was sending in. Nothing. He can't know. So the only way he's going to say, if he says anything that's on that email, there's only one way he knew that. And that's if he read the email and was relaying it back to her. So mm-hmm. we went through the whole session. Oh my gosh, you guys, it was awful. These little kids, there was 2 6-year-olds, a 7-year-old. The kids were just, there's no entertainment value in this at all. Trust me.
Yeah.
It's very cruel. They're talking to their dead family members and so on. And then and we're watching this live, right? So what I've done is I've hooked it up so that I'm watching it. My team is watching it live and I have a little tiny Facebook group, Facebook Messenger going, where my team, they're in Utah, they're watching this Facebook chat. And if he asks her something, then she stalls and I type in the answer, yes or no, mm-hmm. or whatever. So she has no information. So like if he was to say, well, your brother's name is James, isn't it? I would type in yes or no or mm-hmm. whatever. Because she can't have any information. So when you watch the video, well, you can't watch the video. It's private right now. But if you were to watch the video, you would see him. You would see the team. You know, they would be like, she's 12, right? She's just this very shy 12-year-old. And she's dabbing at her eyes or whatever and looking at her mom. And then they kind of glance down. And I guess they glance down at the screen and see what I answered. And that's how they were able to do it. So mm-hmm. he did. He gave him a several minutes reading $400, and it was everything I put in that face in that email, and nothing really more. Oh, in her case, and she's a giant atheist. I mean, they're atheists. We had a right behind her, like where I have my it's not a gargoyle, like
your statue.
This Naomi, we call her Naomi. So right over here, we have the gargoyle. There was a bookcase behind Bailey, and on the bookcase, she had printed out a picture of Jesus. And so it's just sitting in a frame. She had a frame behind her. It's like you can't miss that.
Yeah.
And her reading was so religious. It was amazing. The Archangel Gabriel and the guardian angels are watching over her. And it was just like aimed at somebody who's like definitely Christian.
So by the way, to short circuit it, but you had another person there. So 2 out of the 8.
I ended up pulling a team from New
two
Zealand.
And you were online too. Secretly.
And I was there. And Mark.
And of course he realized this at the end, right? He just came out and said, oh, I know 2 of you guys are fake and Susan's here, right?
No.
Right.
And you think about it.
No.
He would know I have legitimate people who have died. I mean, people have died in my family.
Yeah.
That if he could communicate with the dead, should have come forward and said, I don't understand. I'm getting this message. There's somebody, I think there's somebody here who shouldn't be here. And their dead person wants to contact him. And he could have just, and same mm-hmm. with the people I sent. There are legitimate sure. dead people who could have been in contact. And when I before I set this up, when I sat down with Bailey Harris and her mom, I said, all right, if you really were going to see a real psychic, a real medium, what would you expect them to tell you? And they gave me the names of all the dead people who would be in contact. And when I built their backstory, I made sure those names were nowhere in there and they were opposite because I didn't want him to accidentally,
yeah,
you know, give away something that was actually connected to them because there was no way of doing that. It was all blinded and blinded again and blinded again. I had controls all over the place. And we put it together in 4 days and we busted his ass.
You wrote this all up and you exposed that there were 2 of the 8, 1/4 of the people there, if I did the math right, yeah, were frauds and he did not catch on and he gave them bad readings. And you published this in a national magazine. What was his response to that?
I don't remember. What was his response?
No, I don't think there was one.
Well, he definitely has seen it. And he just says, yeah. This one, I think with the operation, this is Operation Onion Ring. I don't think he had any kind of response.
No, I don't think so. So what are you going to say to that?
Yeah. And you make a really good point too, Susan. Like if he really were psychic, then even if you were skeptical, he could convince you by actually giving you real information, but he did not do that.
My mom and dad are dead and I have a sister who's died. I mean, they could have come through. Why wouldn't they?
Why didn't they?
I would have been more convinced. I wouldn't have been completely convinced. I would have thought something got leaked through somehow, but.
Sure. You would have still been skeptical, but he didn't even give you any information that had any bearing on anything that or really any of the people in had the group. To do with you.
I had 4 people there, 2 different teams, 1 in New Zealand and 1 in Utah. He never mm-hmm. once said anything to them that was, could have been applied to them. Everything was just mm-hmm. what was in the emails.
Again, it's really almost like he's just a fraud and not psychic. So we've been concentrating on this one clear fraud, I'm going to say it, Thomas John.
Hot reader.
But like, so how do we know there aren't really other people out there that you didn't investigate? Is there any kind of test that's official available that people could come forward to prove they have these abilities?
There's all kinds of tests. There's a whole world of people, skeptic groups that have tests out there that would be willing to give you real money mm-hmm. if you could be... really be proved to have a paranormal of any kind event, you know, but mm-hmm. the only people who take these tests are people who are true believers. They're not going to do it because Tyler Henry and Thomas John, they're making a lot of money.
Yeah. Why do they need a $250,000? Like they
that $250,000. Now, if you could prove that you really could communicate with the dead, you would be the richest person in the world, probably. And mm-hmm. the most powerful person in the world. But
that's the other thing. I hate when I hear that answer, even from friends of mine who believe their personal psychic is real. All right, all the TV people are fake, but the personal psychic is real. And they respond, well, they don't need the money. You know, they're not doing it for the money. It's like, how about you donate it to children's cancer research?
How about you
win the Nobel Prize and prove there's an afterlife to the world? Mm-hmm. Isn't that important?
We do all the time. I put up, like when I'm talking to true believers and I'm trying to be kind and talk to them, I'll say something like, you know, why isn't he solving these cases? Why are there still missing children? You know, why mm-hmm. are there still unsolved crimes? Mm-hmm. And then we'll put up like there's a website for missingchildren.org or something like that. And it has, you can go by location. You can say, mm-hmm. well, the psychic lives in Missouri. Well, mm-hmm. here's all the missing cases in Missouri. These children are still out there, not found. Are they abducted? Are they dead? What? Sit down and clear those off. Let's just take care of this whole, you know, section. Just if you can only do this one little area, why can't we just take care of that and help people? But they don't, and they're still missing, and there's so many unsolved cases out there. I mean, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's a good question too, as we're kind of getting towards the end of our time here. What can we do?
You guys, it's just the tiny little bit of the iceberg of stuff we've done. So I knew that having a conversation would make more sense than me trying to rattle it off.
Oh, absolutely. No, this is fascinating. I love these stories. And like, I know you've done a lot to expose, you know, what's going on and show that, you know, these are not real readings or, you know, this is not real information. But, you know, it seems like sometimes the articles come out and the people continue operating. What can we do to help educate people about this or stop these grief vampires from continuing to take people's money from them when they're vulnerable?
Well, there's always a con waiting for anybody who's vulnerable. So, you know, if it isn't psychics, it's something else. There, like I said, the romance scams just in themselves are egregious, that are, they're relying on people not paying good attention or they're vulnerable. So to help, what I would say is I believe in inoculation. I mean, not just with vaccines from science, you know, they're actually going in your arm, but inoculating people and having conversations with your family and friends and your neighbors. Maybe you'll talk to somebody tomorrow and you could say, you know, we had this conversation with this woman on our, in a lecture that I went to, and she was talking about vampires, grief vampires. And I had no idea that it was so prolific and there was so much money in it. And you just have that conversation with somebody and they may come out and say, oh, well, you know, oh, I believe, or they're not yet in that vulnerable situation that they may become into in a month or years from now. And if you just talk about it and let people know, even yourself, that you're forewarned. So when it comes down to that moment where, you know, there's 50 people here, maybe one of you will end up being in a situation where you're tempted to feel that you have to contact the dead. Well, then maybe something will click in your brain. You'll say, wait a second here. Wait a second. I remember back in October of 2022, there was this talk and we were discussing it, and it's inoculating you, and you spread the word and get the inoculation out there. So that's one way of just getting the message out there. Again, remember that the people who are being preyed on, it's not necessarily their fault. Mm-hmm. They're in a moment of time where they're vulnerable to this. And plus, if you're coming from one of the religions that believes in an afterlife, this isn't that far-fetched. There really isn't. And like Rob says, I hear this all the time. People will say, oh, that guy is a fraud. Look at this. This is so blatant. Mm-hmm. But my psychic, no, they're real. And they also use other words too. So sometimes they don't use psychic. They use evidential medium. They use all kinds of other things. I had a very good friend who's very Christian, you know, believes in the 6,000 year kind of thing and all that stuff for the earth. She's way in there, but she thinks that they're prophets, and the prophet would come to her church, and the prophet would do just cold reading. He would do talk to the dead, cold reading, and they called it prophets. And I said, oh, what's this up with this psychic coming to this medium coming to your church? That's not a psychic. We won't have anything to do with psychics. That's a prophet. He's getting his messages directly from God.
Oh, since you mentioned this, Susan, there was a New York Times article where they interviewed you a little bit about somebody who was channeling this little known person, Jesus. You talk about that, and his clientele included people,
the actors from TV and actresses are just like, oh my gosh, you guys, again, how much of it is an act to get in front of the camera or get in published, and how much and network with the right people, because they're also believers in this stuff. Somebody had, I don't even know who that person was. What was the psychic's name? Is somebody?
I don't remember. I found Clara, that a little funny because normally mediums talk to dead people, but Jesus isn't supposed to be dead, is he? So, you know,
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the woman reached out to me. She was a reporter for the New York Times. She said that, you know, have you ever heard of anybody talking to like religious figures and stuff that are mediums? I'm like, of course, it happens all the time. She goes, well, why would they say they're channeling, you know, the Virgin Mary or Jesus or whatever? I'm like, well, you can't check.
Yeah.
And once you add the religion element to it, not only is it, you can't question it because you're attacking my religion, but then that's a whole nother element of like Sylvia Brown, she opened up a church and then you don't get taxed. Yeah. So not only can you not be challenged, because, you know, for the obvious reasons you're attacking my religion, but it's nonprofit.
Again, people,
so what are you going to do? Nobody's going to go after it.
Do not take this as career advice, please.
Yeah. There's a ton of do money not do this.
Ton of money in it, but nobody has ever ended up well. I've not seen any of these people come out of this and you know, look like they've had a happy life. It takes a toll on you. So, I mean, if you're always lying and you can't trust the people around you because you're not psychic, so you don't know really who's in it and who's out of it. And those people who look like they're your biggest fans, they may be sent by me.
Yeah.
They don't know.
And let me mention one thing. I said this last week, but it might be different people here. It is Bob Nygaard who tries to get victims of psychics, but people who claim they're psychic and are extreme con artists and take them sort of life savings, things like that. Right. I interviewed him and asked him about the religious beliefs of his victims that he has to help. And he said he's never had a victim who was an atheist. So he said, I'm not saying it can't happen, but and the huge number of people he's helped, they're all religious people who were primed to believe in this stuff from the beginning.
Absolutely. I had a woman who said, I'm an atheist. I think she came through one of the organizations I talked to, and she says, I'm an atheist. I don't know how the psyche did it, but I believe that it was real.
Yeah,
I
because
really believe he's communicating with the dead.
Yeah, there's not a full overlap in atheist and a person who's a scientific skeptic, right? There are atheists who definitely believe in ghosts and the paranormal also.
That's atheism. Right. That's a little different, but it's absolutely something that happens because again, you're in a vulnerable situation. They don't know how the trick was done. Mm-hmm. And some of them are willing to say, well, maybe it wasn't a trick you just don't know how it's done. It doesn't mean it's not a trick.
Well, yes. That's a really good point. I mean, like motivated reasoning and desperation, you know, no one is immune to that. You know, you can have all the critical thinking skills in the world, but if you get in a moment or a circumstance where, you know, a loved one has passed and you're experiencing desperation and you really want to believe something, I mean, you can talk yourself into anything just about. So.
Right. And it doesn't have to be psychics. I mean, there's a scam waiting for you around every corner. We pass them on our email and our text messages and our phone calls every day. There's somebody out there fishing for you. And it just takes you just not paying good attention or your cognitive is off that day.
Yeah. Or they just happen.
Or somebody is going to fall for it. They're going to, and once they get into it, they're not going to always admit that they did. It's the lost fallacy. What is it? The lost, throwing more money after more money.
Sunk cost fallacy.
You're just like, I couldn't have been fooled. Some of the smartest people are fooled. James Randi proved that. The scientist that the book he was going to come out with, the magician in the laboratory. Mm-hmm. Scientists were thinking they're just too smart to be fooled. Mm-hmm. So they were fooled easily by people who were mentalists and magicians and so on. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that you're, you know, an extremely, you know, credulous person necessarily. It's these people are very practiced and strategic in what they're doing.
Do it all the time. Yeah. They'll do these readings 1,000 times, you know, it's not like, they're very good at what they do.
Exactly.
Most of them are. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been really, really enlightening. And I've been watching the chat and it sounds like it's been really helpful for a lot of people too, to kind of hear the behind the scenes of it. How do you feel about answering some questions?
I'm all for it. Here, let me get my psychic connection. I'll answer questions for you.
You don't even need me to read them, right? I mean, you already know what they are.
I know what they are.
The great Karnak, Johnny Carson's
act. Okay, here's one. Have I ever had a reading? Have I ever found anything that was maybe real? I couldn't prove, you know?
Yeah.
Never happened. The other question is, I know somebody's got is something about earpieces. Are they using earpieces? Probably they're using earpieces, but we can't prove it. We can't say anything because then we could possibly be sued. But we think in Thomas John's case, we see a video after video clip of him where he's blabbing without thinking, just talking. And then he stops
He takes a quick peek down into the right-hand corner of his screen. He looks back up straight in the eye of the person he's reading, and he comes up with, "Who's Bob?" And then it's always like the dad, the brother, somebody really obvious. So we suspect that he's getting his information on Zoom from the right-hand corner, which is probably like a Facebook Messenger or something coming up in the lower corner. We don't know that for sure, but if I was doing it, that's how I would do it. I'd have my friend over there doing the research, and it really just takes minutes.
So Susan, so one of the questions from the people in the chat was, how often do mediums truly believe they're speaking with the dead versus people who actually, you know, knowingly scam people? What do you think?
I think that, well, we don't know for sure, but I think that the majority of people are cold readers. And I think that cold readers trick themselves into believing just because, or they bend it sometimes. They're like, sometimes I have, you know, I'm having a bad day, so I'm going to have to kind of like help it out a little bit. But most of the time I'm really a psychic. So I think that's the majority of them, is that they kind of think that there's something going on. There's enough coincidences in a life that you could bend it to think that you really are. I mean, of course we want to think we're helping people. Mm-hmm. I think most people who claim to be psychic probably think they have some sort of psychic ability. The hot readers, like I said, there's no way they can play that game.
Was there a story about I may be thinking of the wrong person, but Ray Hyman, who started doing stuff like that and thought he was real? Do you know that story?
Yeah, of course. Ray Hyman is one of the fathers of the scientific skepticism world. He was a palm reader and did tarot, and he was making his way through college and doing readings and things for people. And he started to believe it because he started looking, reading the books on it. And he thought he was doing something until one of his friends said, you know, why don't you just start telling people the opposite of what you read and see what happens? And he did. He read a woman, and the woman was stunned, just stunned. And he thought he'd done everything wrong. She wasn't giving him feedback. And then when he was done, she says, that's the best reading I've ever had. And he says, I just was reading the opposite of what I was instructed to read. And so, you know, what he thought he was doing right. And that's when his skepticism came in. Oh, and one more quick question. I always forget, is this James Randi or is this Ray Hyman? Back in the day, there's this effect, and I'm going to give away a magic trick. Okay. So it's called the one ahead. And it's psychics use this phenomena. What it is they put all the, and if anybody seen Nightmare Alley or read the book, damn it. That is right there. That is such good stuff to read or to watch the Del Toro movie. And they put the little slips of paper, and they go out and they get all the paper from all these people in the audience and say, write the question that you want to hear from your dear beloved or whatever. And so what they do is they take the paper, and the first paper the psychic will pull out of a envelope or out of a bucket or whatever, they don't know what, it's a fake or whatever. And then they put it to their head and they hold the other paper in their hand, which has the real reading on it. Something like this is done in Nightmare Alley. And then they open up and they take a peek at what the real question is, but they pretend they're answering this question right here that they're holding to their head, the little piece of paper. And then they take it and they throw it away or burn it, even better. And then they take this paper and they hold it to the head, and then they read the next paper, just take a quick glance at that. They hold it in their hand, take a quick peek. And then they've already know what's on this paper because they peeked at it a minute ago. So Ray Hyman or James Randi was watching this happen he was a young teenager and interested in magic. And he was watching it happen in an actual event, like, you know, here's the guy on the stage, and he was like a faith healer. He was pretending he was real. But what the guy was doing is he had to take out his reading glasses to see what was on the paper when he peeked. So he had his reading glasses on, and he was looking at the paper. It was obvious. And whoever it was, Ray Hyman or James Randi, was like, what the heck? He's looking at the paper. You could see him reading it. And he went to the person next to him, and the other person, he's like, look what he's doing. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. They would not look. Right there. They would not look because they couldn't, because they needed to believe so badly that even though the guy was cheating right in front of them, they refused to look. They refused to admit it. And so they would just be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what's wrong with you. And they're going, oh my gosh, this is so obvious. That's the need that people need so badly to believe.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of which, we got another kind of interesting question. Someone was saying, you know, there have been times when I felt like a dearly departed loved one was with me. Can you tell me what's going on in reality? Is it normal for grieving people to feel the presence of someone that they've lost, you know, without the help?
I mean, everybody here has lost somebody. How many people here can say that they've had a dream that was very realistic, or somebody was coming in, or you smelled them, or you heard them, or their voice, or some music, or you found a coin? It's a common human experience. If we didn't do that, that would be weird. But yes, of course, the mannerisms you see of people just in your normal life that you see a lot of, you're going to have that, especially when you're maybe a little more tired or you're grieving. You may see them again. You may feel like you saw that movement. You might sense them still sitting there. It's very common, and it doesn't even have to, you don't have to be in grief at the point. You could just, it happens constantly. You hear their voice, you smell the scent, all the time.
So it's like something reminds you of them, or you're just thinking about them.
And it feels real. It could feel really real. So a lot of times it'll happen out of the corner of your eye, or when you're sleeping, or you're about to wake up, or you're about to fall asleep. That's common. But it's in just a normal case, you could hear their footsteps walking down the hallway, because you always heard their footsteps walking down the hallway. It was something you internalized and you really weren't paying attention. But now at this time, you were just thinking of them, and then maybe you hear their footsteps. Or it's just like that Sherlock Holmes effect where you don't realize you're thinking of this. And then really, like, you look at a picture on the wall and it makes you jogs a memory, and that memory goes to something else. Also the effect of the one where the phone rings and.
Yeah. Just thinking about you.
I was just thinking about you. Well, it's common for people to call at the same time, check in on you at a certain time, to get off work at this hour. And that's usually when they would call you, or, and so on. But actually, partly it is that you think of them a lot and they don't call. Only remember the time they did call, and it reinforces your memory of them. We forget more than what we remember.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of coincidences that happen to us all the time, but we don't always pay attention to them. Sometimes we do, and that's when you notice it.
Yeah, we're primed to remember the hits and not the misses. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Susan, have you ever clearly exposed someone and you sent the material to people who are firm believers and they will not change their minds?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this goes to the believer effect. Every once in a while, I'll reach out to somebody who's definitely been hot red, and I usually try to give them an out. I'll write to them and I'll say, hey, you know, it's been a couple weeks, and now I know that you've thought about it. You know, you realize he was reading your Facebook page, right? You know, I'll say something like that to give him like an out, where they go, yeah, I know now. Yeah, I figured it out. When they're just like going, oh my gosh, what's on my Facebook page? How could he read it? But I had this one guy, his name is Ken. He put up a video on YouTube. It was like, you know, his reading he had with Thomas John, and he had like 7 people view it. But for some reason or other, we contacted him and we saw this video, and I reached out to him. I said that same thing, you know, now the time has passed, you know that he read your Facebook page, right? And he's like, no, absolutely not. And I said, well, it's all over your Facebook page, and it was easy to find your name on Facebook. Well, he didn't know I was going to be at the event where he gave the reading. I'm like, what do you mean he didn't know you were going to be there? He goes, no, somebody else bought the ticket that's not connected to me in any way. So there's no way he knew I was going to be at that event. And I thought to myself, well, that's odd. He goes, I didn't pay with my credit card. Nobody had my name. I didn't check in with my name. So he knew I was going to be, he did not know I was going to be there. So there's no way he could have connected my name to that Facebook page. And we thought about it, my team and I, and the next day, one of my team members said, oh yeah, here's the post. And it turns out that the guy had posted, we made a screenshot of it. he had gone to Thomas John and he had posted in the event page, I have been trying to buy the ticket, but I can't get my email to whatever reason. I can't get the ticket. And the medium responded saying, email me directly and I'll help you get your ticket for my event.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, great, I can't wait to go. And we're like, you just lied to me. You said mm-hmm. that somebody else had bought that ticket and the psychic didn't know you were going to be there. So I wrote to the guy again and I showed him the screenshot. I said, I think you forgot that you are mm-hmm. the one who bought the ticket. And not only did you buy the ticket, you posted it on Facebook and you interacted with the psychic. You must have forgotten that little bit of information there. And his response was, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that I'm getting closer to death and I need to believe.
Uh-huh.
At the end, yeah. nothing I said was going to show that he was, mm-hmm. he was not believing. Yeah.
He had made up his mind.
If I showed it to him right up front, mm-hmm. nope.
Yeah.
It's real.
Well, that's, yeah.
I have to believe.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know,
there's an article on that too. It's called Thomas John and the Believers.
Wow.
It's there with the screenshots.
And that's, it's disappointing, but also I guess not really that surprising, you know, after all the evidence that you've put forward that, you know, this is clearly not a real skill that people are performing. But thank you for all of your work on this. And, you know, for telling us about it and giving us kind of the look behind the curtain, this has been really interesting. I am so glad we got to hear from you and all of your actual experiences to find this stuff out and do the sleuthing and the detecting and watching the videos and the recordings to find all these holes in it. I mean, that's, in my opinion, what we need. Yeah, maybe it's not going to convince everyone who wants to believe it for a particular reason, but I'm glad we have the information available to us. So thank you for that.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.